What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of MIAA Weekly. I am your host, Jesse Cordova. Email the show at miaaweekly@gmail.com and make sure you follow the show on Twitter at MIAA Weekly. We have another great show for you this week. At least I hope it turns out great, but when you're working with limited talent like I am, it's always a shaky proposition. Obviously, this week's episode is coming out a little bit later than, or later in the week than we normally do. I mentioned if you follow me on Twitter, once again, at MIAA Weekly, some big news kind of came down the pipe this week as it was discovered that the MIAA actually had a motion on the table to bring non-conference games back to the football schedule starting in 2021. So it wouldn't have been this fall, but next season. Despite the fact that fans have been clamoring for it for a very long time, and despite the fact that it seemed like there was a good amount of momentum behind that movement amongst the institutions, that motion failed. It needed a simple majority to pass, and the final tally of the vote ended up being 5-5 with 2 abstaining. The two who abstained, Lincoln and Nebraska Kearney, were forced to abstain because, according to the MIAA bylaws, presidents who are not physically present for the vote are not allowed to have a proxy vote in their place. Once again, something that I said on social media this week, but just in case you listen to the show but don't follow me on Twitter, I will not disclose any specifics out of respect for the individual's privacy. However, I've been told by multiple people that at least one of those presidents was unable to attend the NCAA convention in California because they, we'll just say that there were reasons beyond their control that they could not travel. Again, out of respect for this person's privacy, I don't feel like it's my place to basically put their situation into public, on top of the fact that I haven't been able to confirm it independently. But just know that at least one of those presidents, there was something beyond their control. They did send someone to the meeting to speak on their behalf. But like I said, according to the bylaws, the people that were sent in the president's stead were not allowed to submit a vote. Here in a few minutes, you're going to hear from the athletic director at Missouri Southern State University, Jared Brugman. He was, in addition to being the athletic director at MSSU, he was a member of the football task force or committee. However, I don't really know what their official title was, but he was part of a task force that was tasked with investigating the viability of bringing non-conference games back to the MIAA. The result of that committee's meetings and investigation was that they did suggest to the league that non-conference was a win for the MIAA. Obviously, as I just said, the vote didn't go that way. So he joins us here in just a couple of minutes to share his perspective. I got about 15 minutes with him on the phone the other day. I will apologize in advance because I did have a little bit of a technical difficulty with my computer, either on my end or on Mr. Brugman's end, but we were not able to record the interview in the normal fashion, and so I ended up just calling him on the phone and holding up a recorder like I did back in my newspaper days. So the sound quality is not great, but his insight was very valuable as somebody obviously who has a horse in the race, so to speak, as you know, Missouri Southern is absolutely one of the schools that would benefit from adding non-conference to the MIAA, but also as somebody who sat in on the meetings and was part of the committee that ultimately reported to the MIAA that non-conference football was a good idea. And then, you know, not only did he hear the news, but he was actually in the room at that meeting at the NCAA convention when the vote failed. So I reached out to several athletic directors, football coaches, administrators from around the MIAA. Understandably, this is news that is upsetting to some. Obviously, since it didn't pass, it was good news for others. It's a very layered and nuanced topic, as we talked about in the very first episode of our podcast. Different institutions have different reasons for having the opinion that they have on it. Some want it because it's easier to get wins outside of the MIAA. Others don't want it because maybe they're worried about the cost of travel, or maybe they're worried that they'll have a hard time getting other teams to come to their place to play because of how good they are and maybe how geographically isolated they are. So again, if you want a refresher on all of the reasons that were kind of being floated around, definitely go back, listen to episode one of the podcast where I talked to the commissioner of the league, Mike Racy, and we spent about 30 minutes on that topic just at length going at that. So I won't rehash that all here, but again, if you want to kind of get more background on this debate going back as far as last summer, definitely go back to episode one of the podcast and check that out for that. So with that being said, most of the athletic directors, coaches, and administrators that I reached out to either declined to respond to my requests or simply said something to the effect of no comment. One response that I did get was from the athletic director at Missouri Western State University, Josh Looney. Josh Looney wrote back to me, "As it relates to the vote itself and the details of that discussion, I'll defer to the conference office to offer comment," basically saying he didn't want to comment on the vote itself. However, as far as Missouri Western's stance, I've been very public about our desire to see non-conference scheduling return to the MIAA. I've been a proponent for two open weeks, both internally and externally. While we believe that there are many benefits to ending silo scheduling in the MIAA, fan interest, student-athlete experience, budgeting, and home game flexibility, strength of schedule control, renewed rivalries, etc., our main reason for supporting an open schedule is about giving the MIAA the best possible scenario come playoff selection. The short of it is that our league is at a disadvantage in selections when being compared to other teams with similar records in an open conference, in this case, the GLIAC and the GLVC. There is a relatively no differentiator for MIAA and GAC teams with the same record. It's not necessarily about getting a third team into the playoffs. That's not guaranteed by opening the schedule. But we're doing nothing but hurting our cause by keeping it closed. The league needs to be comfortable with the possibility that a 9-2 team is not a lock to make the postseason under a silo schedule model. If we feel we are the best Division II football conference, which we do, then we need to go out and prove it to position our league for postseason success. That has been sort of the rallying cry that I hear the most in off-the-record conversations as well from many different people. That we talked about it all football season long, even on this show. Top to bottom, the MIAA is quite possibly the toughest football conference in all of Division II. That doesn't mean that one of the top tier teams wins a national championship every year. But in the last 3 years, MIAA teams who did not make the D2 playoffs have played in 8 bowl games against teams from outside of their conference. In those 8 games, the MIAA is 8-0. The only team to beat any MIAA teams in the D2 playoffs last year was a Ferris State team that started the playoffs ranked number two in the nation. The year before that, it was Ferris State and Indianapolis. There are not a lot of teams outside of the MIAA that have shown a consistent ability to beat MIAA competition. More on that later on. Again, after we get through the interview with Jared Bruggeman, I'll offer some more insight, my opinion. I'm doing the best I can here. Obviously, non-conference football is something that I've been tracking for a long time in this league. As I said on Twitter earlier this week, I've been tracking this story since MIAA Weekly was still known as Newman and Duquesne, and it wasn't a podcast, it was a blog. So this is a story that I've had an eye on for a long time. This is not the result that I expected when the vote came down. And to be quite candid with you, it's not the result that I wanted. I've been very open, or I've tried to be very open about the fact that I'm a proponent for non-conference football for all the reasons that Dr. Looney from Missouri Western outlined in his statement. For the student athlete experience, for, you know, stacking the MIAA up with other conferences to prove on a consistent basis before the postseason that the MIAA really is a tougher league than the GLVC or the GLIAC or the Lone Star or whoever else. So again, I'm trying to keep my personal opinions out of this portion of the podcast. I'm simply trying to be a reporter, so to speak. I'm trying to report to you the fact that the vote was 5-5 with two abstaining. The fact that the two abstentions were because the presidents of those institutions were absent from the vote and the bylaws stated that they were not allowed to vote. And also reporting what I've been told on the record by the people who are willing to go on the record over what is kind of a sensitive topic around the MIAA, because of the fact that while it seems like most of the time the university presidents and athletics departments have a fairly one-sided consensus about most things, this is something that, as evidenced by the vote, is pretty close to being split down the middle. So I understand the apprehension of some administrators to come out and make a statement about a topic that is, one, still very fresh, and two, was very contentious. But with that being said, once again, Jared Bruggeman, the athletic director at Missouri Southern State University, was willing to go on the record and be recorded, and this is what he had to say.
Jared Bruggeman is the athletic director at Missouri Southern State University, but he also has a unique perspective on the motion for non-conference football in the MIAA, as he was a member of the task force that the league put together last year to investigate the viability and whether or not it was a good idea to add non-conference to the league, and he joins us now on the podcast. Jared, thank you very much for giving me some time today.
Yeah, absolutely. No problem at all.
So, you know, I mentioned you were part of that task force. We're going to start there. We're going to kind of go back in time a little bit. When the task force came to their conclusion at the end of their investigation, which was to say that they thought that non-conference football was a good idea for the league, can you tell me or our listeners what factors did the task force consider with regard to adding non-conference, and what led you to the conclusion that it was a good idea?
Okay, well, this actually, just to give the full disclosure, this actually begins long before that task force was created. Prior to that, there were several institutions, Missouri Southern one of them, where we were concerned about the non-conference, not having non-conference schedules for a variety of reasons. And so I traveled to every school in the MIAA, met with their AD and talked about it. Some were new to their job, and some have since left those positions and gone on to other positions elsewhere. But so this is really processed started 3 or 4 years ago when we kind of worked this out. Now the task force was finally put together under the recommendation of obviously there was enough interest in the league to have this kind of looked at in great detail. The first meeting, President Scott from Pittsburgh State hosted that. They actually hosted it over at his house over in Pittsburgh. That was the first that we've met several times over the last couple of years. And the final conclusion of that was a 6-2 vote in favor of opening the schedule for a variety of different reasons. You know, Ken Weiser serves as the our football rep at the NCAA level. And he tells, you know, as a RAC in charge of that, he tells us that there are criteria that we cannot utilize because we have a closed schedule. Like, for example, they want to know what is your in-region record. Well, our in-region record would be the same as our conference record. You know, common opponents. Well, when you don't play anybody outside your own conference, your common opponents are your common opponents in the league, but there's no way to compare your league to another league. So even with that, that's a difficult thing. And then the final point of it is strength of schedule. By definition, our league is a 500 strength of schedule because we don't play anybody outside our league and we play everybody balanced within the league. So all of those things went into consideration for it, is how do we justify, and if you look at our bowl records, I think, in the MIAA, the teams that qualify for the bowl, in some cases was a 7th place team in our league, ended up winning the bowl game against number 3 in another league. That goes to show you the quality of competition in our league, and the problem is that there's no way to show that in the NCAA criteria based on selection for our regionals. So that was a big part of this conversation. Along with it was the positives, I would say, that for opening it up, you know, we have an HBCU institution, and they feel the need that there should be some opportunity for them to play another HBCU. And then there are some institutions like ourselves and probably Northeastern, some of those other ones that are just trying to compare ourselves and see how do we really stack up. It's hard to tell in the MIAA, but do we stack up? I think Lincoln fits in that as well for other reasons too. But, you know, how do we stack up with other schools and other conferences? You know, a prime example would be SBU left our league a few years back and then came back into Lufkin. You know, they made the playoffs. And then Lindenwood this last year. Lindenwood left our league this spring, won their conference, played in the NCAA champion in the regionals, won the first round game, and then got ultimately destroyed by Northwest 63-3 or whatever that score was. So I think those are things that we want to see how well that we stack up and give us those opportunities. Plus, there's potential for money games. There's potential for easier wins than you can get in the MIAA. There's potential for us to do cross-conference, schedules. Or you could always, in theory, play another team in your conference, again, if they're struggling to find open dates or whatever. So all those things were discussed. The one thing that stood out that I thought was a real viable argument was a student-athlete experience. And I'm not, other programs and other things, you have an opportunity to travel to other places and play them. Football's a different animal. But in a student-athlete's four-year career, they're going to go to Hayes, Kansas twice. They're going to go to Kearney, Nebraska twice. They're going to go to, Jeff City twice. But they'll never have a chance to do something different. Basketball got to go to Puerto Rico, and basketball gets to go to these other things. And other programs and sports get the opportunity for athletes to experience something beyond the standard. And I felt that was an important point to discuss with us, too. And it did seem like they carried some weight, but at the end of the day, that's not what was decided by the president.
You mentioned that the last time that the task force got together and kind of took a straw vote amongst themselves, it was 6-2 in favor of. For those two people who were not in favor, and it doesn't really matter who they were or where they were from, but for those two, what were their reasons for being against non-conference? What were kind of the arguments on the other side?
Well, I mean, there's some valid arguments on both sides. I don't mean to, imply that there's not on the other side of it. One of it is difficulty in scheduling, and I do understand that when you have open dates, that's a challenge. And some of the leagues around us are closed schedules as well. And the argument is like, well, why are we not just part of the whole point of a conference is to help you ease a schedule. That's really the foundation and fundamental part of it. And so why are we not utilizing that? Well, obviously I've explained some of the points against it. Another one that's discussed, which is not valid, which is completely bogus, but is the concept that you need to have a true champion. We want to have a true champion. Well, I mean, that sounds logical when you think about it. If everyone plays everyone, we know who wins. But that's not how it works. At the end of the day, we've had two co-champs. So, you can't, that's a not valid argument. Although it makes sense on paper, it makes sense when you say it. The reality is that, Fort Hayes and Northwest, one year both had one loss. And we don't break it apart by any way because we just the example I use, and I'm going to stand by it. I used to do scheduling for football at the University of North Dakota. That was one of my responsibilities. Well, we flew Delta State in, who had made the playoffs the year before, flew them in from down in Mississippi. Well, we were North Dakota. We had won the national championship the year before. It's North Dakota. Nobody wants to go there, right? It's cold. It's way up north. It's a long ways away. But we did that, and you can do that. You can find games. It's difficult, but yes, you can find games. And then, you know, that's what we're talking about, some scheduling alliances with some other leagues and so forth. But that is it's a valid point. It is difficult, but it's possible to get those things done.
So, correct me if I'm wrong, but you were present. You were in the room at the NCAA convention. We're joined by the Missouri Southern Athletics Director, Jared Brueggemann, as we talk about the motion by the MIAA that failed last week that would have brought non-conference play back to football in the league. But you told me you were in the room when the vote took place. Is that correct?
That is correct. And there were a few other athletic directors in there. The presidents are allowed to have, CEOs are allowed to have an advisor with them. Now, we don't speak, although two of them did speak on behalf of their institutions, but their presidents were not there, but we're able to be there and advise, and so yes, I was in the room.
Okay. So can you confirm for me that the vote ended up being 5-5 with two abstaining?
Yeah. I mean, that's what it came down to. They did a roll call vote, so I'm sure that's somewhere in the minutes.
Okay. So with that being said, that means, I mean, obviously, you know, people, you know, can tell that's a fairly straightforward, that's a tie. It didn't get voted down by a majority. It ended up tying, and it needed to have a majority to pass. So with that being said, considering those two abstentions, is it possible that this could be something that's discussed further over the course of the year and then brought back to the table in a year's time?
Yeah, I'm not sure where we go from here or what the intentions, but certainly, this is a CEO, obviously a conversation. CEOs run the league. They're able to kind of dictate the policies and procedures for things. And on occasion, they've deviated from our own bylaws in order to facilitate something that they felt was urgent or was necessary at that time. So it certainly can be brought up again. I'm not sure what discussions are taking place outside that. The task force obviously has completed its recommendation 6-2, and ultimately did not pass to the CEOs. I do think had all the CEOs been available and present at the event, it would have probably been a different vote. But again, you never know how CEOs are going to vote. I wouldn't speak for those two that were not there. But I have a feeling that the theme was that they were in favor of opening up the schedule, at least from their athletic director's perspective. Now, how CEOs choose to do what they do, that's obviously their choice, and not my place to speak to it.
Well, obviously, I think that we've probably covered this question over the course of our interview, but I want to ask it anyway. Speaking solely, I mean, I've asked you a lot of these questions kind of from the context of being a member of that task force that kind of looked into this for the league. But speaking strictly as the athletic director at Missouri Southern State University, what is the school's or your institution's reaction to the news that there won't be any non-conference starting in 2021?
Well, again, I appreciate you distinguishing the difference between that. I mean, as a member of the task force, I'm simply relaying the information of discussion. Regarding my stance as an individual that represents Missouri Southern State University, obviously it's disappointing. You know, we really feel that it's critical to our success. We feel it's also critical to the greater success of the MIAA. And I think that's also a very frustrating component of it, is that if we really are, if the MIAA is the best football playing conference as far as top to bottom, I get, they're not always winning national championships every year, but if our number 7 team can beat the number 3 in the league, I think it shows you that really the quality of depth, particularly in the middle area, but we're not having a chance to show that. And then when you see what happens, with Lindenwood leaving and how their record suddenly changes immediately, I'm not saying that, obviously it was a different team, from a year ago than it was this year, but the results were the same when they played Northwest. So I feel that we're missing an opportunity to show who we are as a league, I feel that it's detrimental to the success of Missouri Southern in particular, because we're not able to show how good we really are when you're always playing that kind of quality competition. Not to mention, you know, when the teams are as good as they are in the MIAA, they're hurting each other. I mean, that's part of the game. It's a, there's, you know, injuries are part of this. But you're more likely to have that when you're playing a high quality of competition. I can say that truly from a, when I came from a Division I institution. We would play an SEC school, and we're in the Big Sky Conference. And I can tell you, you are very nervous and upset when you go into those games, because just the physical play is a little bit different, and the likelihood of injury is different. So I think there's a lot of things like that. So anyway, from Missouri Southern's perspective, it's disappointing. I'm not sure what the next steps are going to be. But I hopefully, I do hope that there's some other opportunities for us to at least have this conversation again and get the right people in the room. The one thing I really am disappointed in from my perspective is the fact that I do believe, not knowing of course, but I do believe that the census would have been, it probably would have been 7-5. And it's unfortunate that the greater good wasn't probably achieved in that conversation, you know. Unfortunate, but it is the way the rules work, and we understand that, and so I think that's what we just have to move forward with, knowing what the rules are and building consensus enough to maybe have this conversation again.
He is the athletic director at Missouri Southern State University, and he was also a member of the MIAA football task force that investigated whether or not it was a good idea to bring non-conference football back to the league. Jared Bruggeman, I appreciate your time today. Thank you very much for your candor, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do want to say this. I appreciate everything you guys do. And also, regarding that task force, that was a lot of work, and everybody on there was very thoughtful and considerate, no matter how it ended up and what sway they swayed on that. So I don't want to disregard any of the comments or the work into it. It was a great committee. Like I said, a lot of discussions over a year and a half's time, and we appreciate it. And at the end of the day, if it didn't go through, it didn't go through. But it wasn't from a lack of consideration. So I think the task force did a wonderful job, and I think President Scott at Pittsburgh State also did a great job in leading that task force.
All right. Thank you very much for your time, Jared. Have a great day.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
You're listening to MIAA Weekly. I am your host, Jesse Cordova. Email the show at MIAAweekly@gmail.com and make sure you follow the show on Twitter at MIAA Weekly. That's going to wrap it up here for segment one. Once again, I apologize for the quality of that sound. We had some technical difficulties, and I was sort of in a position where I had to make do with whatever I had around me, and that was an old digital recorder and a cell phone. And so that's kind of what we used for the interview. In segment two, I will give you my opinion on the vote from last week at the NCAA convention, what this means for some of the different teams moving forward, and what I think is the real motivation behind a handful of teams who voted no. Spoiler alert, it's a lot more self-serving than they'll ever admit on the record. And then after that, we will have our vision of Division II bracketology. Basketball fans, I have not forgotten about you. We will take a look at how the MIAA is stacking up in the regional race against teams from the GAC and NSIC in the second half of Segment 2. Keep it locked right here. More MIAA Weekly coming up in about 60 seconds. Welcome back in for segment two of the MIAA Weekly podcast. A reminder to everybody, I'm your host, Jesse Cordova. Email the show at MIAAweekly@gmail.com and make sure you follow the show on Twitter at MIAA Weekly. And segment one of the show, I just tried to give you the facts. I didn't want to put too much of my own opinion in that, but the simple facts are these, just for a quick rundown in case for some reason you skipped this far ahead. Last week at the NCAA convention, the MIAA presidents convened for I'm assuming it was a regularly scheduled meeting, but one of the items on the docket for that meeting was opening up the conference football schedule to make room for non-conference games. The rules stated that To pass, that motion needed a simple majority among the 12 voting members of the MIAA. That would have been 7 votes for people that don't have to do math. The final tally of that vote was 5-5. The 2 abstaining votes were Lincoln and Nebraska Kearney. They were forced to abstain because the MIAA bylaws state that if a president is not physically present for the vote, then they are not allowed to have a proxy vote in their place. One of those two presidents, I will confirm this much, one of those two presidents was not able to be at the NCAA convention for reasons beyond their control. I do not know what the other president's reason was for not being there at that meeting. I have been told by a couple of people, but I have not been able to confirm, nor is it really my business to confirm the situation with the other president. And that's why I'm not going to go into details with it. But I will tell you that at least one of those presidents, it was beyond their control. They couldn't be there. And the proxies were told that they could not vote in the president's place. The consensus among people that I have spoken to, and again, this is somewhat conjecture because obviously without speaking with those presidents, we can't be entirely certain what their intention would have been. But the consensus among the people that I've spoken to is that both Lincoln and Nebraska Kearney would have voted yes on this motion. If they had been present, this would be a very different podcast, and we would be talking about possibilities for who teams could be scheduling in 2021. Instead, the motion failed, and this is what we're talking about today. So the first order of business is, I've mentioned already a couple times in the podcast, the final tally of the vote for non-conference football was 5 in favor, 5 against. Once again, Lincoln, Nebraska, Kearney were not present. They weren't allowed to vote. They abstained. The yes votes, the people or the institutions who voted in favor of adding non-conference games to the MIAA football schedule, who voted in favor of adding non-conference games to the MIAA football schedule, were Missouri Southern, Pittsburgh State, Northeastern State, Emporia State, and Missouri Western. The schools who were opposed were Northwest Missouri State, Central Missouri, Fort Hays State, Central Oklahoma, and Washburn. Now, I mentioned in segment one, or at the end of segment one, near the end of segment one, that I was going to give an opinion on the outcome of this vote. I'll tease it one more time, or I'll reference it one more time. In episode one of this podcast, I had a conversation with MIAA Commissioner Mike Racy. We talked about this very topic. We talked about whether or not it was a good idea to bring non-conference football back to the league. We talked about the fact that the MIAA Football Task Force had come back after meeting and investigating the viability and probabilities and whether it was a good idea, and they had made the suggestion, the recommendation, that the MIAA should bring back non-conference football. And then I spent a good portion of that podcast trying to give the two sides perspectives. This is the argument, or these are the arguments for adding non-conference, and these are the arguments against adding non-conference. I think that most people who listen to the show fall into the category of wanting non-conference football. So the reasons for adding non-conference would be a better fan experience, a better student-athlete experience, being able to control your strength of schedule by playing schools from outside of your league, giving the MIAA a better profile when it comes to postseason selection because they have a better, or potentially a better, regional win-loss outside of their league and a better strength of schedule outside of their league. the opportunities for institutions to open new recruiting pipelines depending on how far away they go to play some non-conference games. Those are just, you know, some of the examples of reasons why most people think that non-conference football is a good idea. Some of the reasons on the other side for not wanting to bring non-conference football into the MIAA. Ease of scheduling. Right now, the football schedule for every MIAA team is set it and forget it. It's something that kind of gets taken off of the athletics administration's plate because they know that every year the conference is making their football schedule for them. There is the cost associated with non-conference because you'll have to travel every once in a while, and you might find yourself making longer trips that are more expensive. There's also the argument, if you're one of the top tier teams, that it might be harder to convince a team to come and play you, and you might end up having no choice but to pay a lower level team to come play you and kind of get an easy gimme win that doesn't help your schedule or your strength of schedule. These are all valid arguments to some extent. The cost, I can't argue with. We've talked about it before that, you know, as much as we say that the MIAA is the SEC of D2, it is not the SEC. There is no MIAA network that is partnered with ESPN. I mean, there is an MIAA network, but it's not partnered with ESPN. They don't make millions in TV revenue. They don't make millions of dollars for making certain bowl games. I understand that. Not every athletics department in this league has just a ton of resources laying around. So some of those arguments are valid arguments. I don't think that for a few of the schools who voted no, any of those reasons is the actual reason they voted no. Over the course of last football season, and really over the course of the last 7 to 8 to maybe even the better part of 10 years, we have seen tiers emerge in the MIAA football standings. With a few exceptions, there are maybe 3 schools in this league who are consistently in the playoff picture. There are a couple of schools that have gotten better and are knocking on that door, but year in and year out, there are only a few schools that really feel coming into the season that they have a real shot at making the D2 playoffs. Or I should say, that are projected to make the D2 playoffs. The tier below that, you're looking at schools that are winning between 6 and 8 games, just depending on how the bounces go. Those are the schools, those are the teams that in a given year, the hope is that they finish closer to 8, make a good bowl game, you know, in the absolute best case scenario, they steal a win somewhere they shouldn't, and at 9-2, they have what they consider a special season, and they find themselves in the playoff picture. The tier below that are your schools that are going to win 3 to 5 games. Every year we say that one or two of these teams could surprise some people. They've got the talent to win a game here and there that they shouldn't win. They keep things interesting. And then there are the teams at the bottom that really are kind of racing to be the team that finishes 2-9 instead of the team that finishes 1-10 or 0-11. So if those are the tiers of this league right now, and as we mentioned, that first tier are the ones that every single year they project to be in the playoff discussion, and most likely, at minimum, 2 of them are going to make it. There are 3 of those schools right now. For those 3 schools, it's essentially a 2-game season. Every year, they get to go into the year and say, if we go 1-1 in those 2 games, and then just do what we're supposed to do the rest of the way, we're going to make the D2 playoffs. Think about that. If you're not a fan of one of those schools, you look at the schedule and think of it in terms of 11 weeks. Over the course of 11 weeks, we got to find a way to win 9. But if you're one of those schools, one of those rare few at the very top of this league, you go into the fall every year talking to your athletic director, if you're the coach, and say, these are the two teams we're worried about. If we go 1-1, we're in. If that's their reality, why in the world would they want the rest of the league to get a foothold to possibly climb out of the cellar? Why would those few schools want the MIAA to have more 8- and 9-win teams by virtue of getting to play schools from outside of the conference? All that's going to do is muddy the water. You know, right now we talk about, with the silo scheduling, there's going to come a time that a very, very good 9-2 MIAA team is going to miss the playoffs. It's unfortunate. We haven't seen it yet, but frankly, it's probably only a matter of time. If the schedule's opened up and one of those 3- to 5-win MIAA teams wins 2 games in convincing fashion over teams out of the GLVC, I do think there's a higher probability that the MIAA gets a third team into the postseason or into the playoffs. Think about this year's bracket. Ferris State ran away with the 1 seed out of the GLIAC. Lindenwood won 8 games and hosted a playoff game out of the GLVC. Harding and Wachita Baptist played a closed schedule. Got 2 teams out of the GAC. Indianapolis won 9 games, but one of their losses was to Lindenwood. They got in. And then you had Northwest Missouri State and Central Missouri. That was your field. That was the D2 playoffs in this region. Which, sidebar, regionalization, that's something I'm coming for later on. Watch for that episode of the podcast coming in the future. Regionalization is a problem at the Division II level. But that was the field this year in this region in football. Imagine if one of the 3- or 5-win teams this year in the MIAA, let's say Emporia State, instead of Emporia State having to play, I'm picking 2 teams at random here, Washburn and Missouri Western. They got to go play Missouri S&T and William Jewell. I don't think it's just arrogance when I say Emporia State would have hammered those 2 teams this year. What was Emporia State in the MIAA? 4-7? Emporia State wins those 2 games. It hurts the profile of the GLVC. All of a sudden, an 8-3 or 9-2 Missouri Western looks a lot better than an 8-3 or 9-2 Lindenwood or Indianapolis. By the way, what happened to Lindenwood and Indianapolis when they played MIAA teams in the playoffs? I'm going to let the question sit there. You can Google it if you want. I think most of us know. So again, it is better for the league, for the MIAA, it is better for there to be non-conference games. If you're worried about a true champion, put a week at the back end where you can pick 2 teams to play for a conference championship. That's not unheard of in the Division II level. If that's really what your argument is, make it happen, because we can do that. But it is better for the league to play non-conference football games. But it is decidedly worse for the three teams in this league who are always favorites to make the playoffs. Because if four-win teams become 5- and 6-win teams overnight, they recruit better. And then 5 and 6 wins turns into 7 wins. And it's a lot harder to go to their place and win. And 3 years ago, you were talking to your athletic director and you didn't even pay attention to that 4-win team. Now, you study film on them and you realize 3 years ago, they didn't have these kind of athletes. What happened? Oh, yeah. They got to go beat up on William Jewell and Missouri S&T and SBU and Truman. And everyone remembered how much better the competition is in the MIAA. And even the lower tier teams were able to go and get really, really good D2 athletes. There's a drop-off in talent in this league right now. The lack of non-conference is a reason why, in my opinion. You're listening to MIAA Weekly. I am your host, Jesse Cordova. Email the show at MIAAweekly@gmail.com and make sure you follow the show on Twitter at MIAAweekly. I'm skipping the mailbag this week because of the fact that we are probably about 45 to 50 minutes into this podcast right now, and we have done nothing but discuss the non-conference vote in the MIAA in football. And understandably so. This is by far the biggest story that we have covered since I started doing this podcast. It's something that, once again, the fans have been calling for and talking about for a number of years. It's something that we spent most of, or I guess you'd say all of this past football season, thinking that a solution was on the way come January. And we found out this week that that solution isn't coming. At least not in the immediate future. But I do want to talk a little bit of basketball because it is basketball season. So real quickly before I get out of here, I did have a couple of people reach out to me and ask for an update on what the rest of the region looks like in basketball. Obviously, we know right now that Missouri Southern and Northwest Missouri State has sort of separated from the pack, but then right behind them, you've got Rogers State with a 9-3 conference record as well. So MIAA fans are able to kind of look at the standings in this league and, you know, use the eyeball test to kind of determine who are the schools in this league who are sort of in the conversation for a regional. The first regional poll should come out in the third week of February, so we're about 3 weeks away from seeing that. But in the meantime, I actually went ahead and I looked through the rest of the region to kind of get an update on how some schools out of the Northern Sun and GAC are doing so far this year. I will say that there are a couple of teams that started out hot that I didn't think would sustain, and they have. There's one team that I thought would be in the conversation to possibly be a 1 or 2 seed based on what I saw from them earlier in the year, and they've actually fallen off worse than I thought they would. So obviously we will start with the MIAA. I already mentioned Northwest Missouri State, Missouri Southern, Rogers State are three schools that I think would be pretty firmly in the top 8 if the polls came out this week. I think that Nebraska, Kearney, Washburn, and Northeastern State right now would be, I guess you'd say, on the bubble if we were talking like this is Division I. Again, regionalization rears its head. But I think that those would be teams that you consider to be on the bubble. At the Division II level, there is no RPI rating. However, they do have Massey ratings for Division II basketball. Right now, Northwest Missouri State and Missouri Southern have the two best RPIs in the MIAA, not surprising. Northwest Did I say RPIs just now? I did say RPIs. I meant Massey ratings. Northwest and Missouri Southern have the best Massey ratings in the MIAA right now. Northwest is number 3 in the country according to Massey ratings. Southern is at number 12. Rogers State is sitting firmly in the middle at number 32. Again, if you assume that the regional ranking committees try to get as many of the top 64 teams in the Massey ratings into the tournament, then you'd say that Rogers State is kind of firmly in the middle. UNK and Washburn are at number 51 and 54, respectively. Northeastern State looks like they have some work to do as far as the Massey ratings are concerned. They're at number 70. But if I remember correctly, looking at the rest of their schedule, Northeastern State is actually still projected to win 20 games. I think that 20 games in this region this year will put them into the conversation. So out of the Northern Sun, right now, Minnesota Duluth is leading that league with a 16-4 overall record, and that includes an 11-3 mark in their conference. Minnesota Duluth has a number 24 Massey rating, so they lead the conference. However, the team with the best Massey rating in the Northern Sun is actually Northern State, who's sort of a perennial powerhouse out of Aberdeen, South Dakota. Northern State is 15-5 this year with an 11-3 record in the conference as well, and they have the number 23 rank in the Massey ratings. I think that the only bubble team right now out of the NSIC is probably Sioux Falls. They're 15-5 overall as well with an 11-3 record in their conference, but they have a couple of really bad losses on their schedule, including a neutral site loss in Kansas City to a Pittsburgh State team who's currently sitting near the bottom of the MIAA standings, as well as a loss in their conference by almost 30 points to Minnesota Crookston, who is sub 500 and near the bottom of their own conference standings. So Sioux Falls, you could say they're on the bubble just by virtue of their win-loss record, but they probably got some work to do to impress the regional committee. And then finally, out of the GAC, I think this is where you find the next best basketball in the region this year besides the MIAA. Southeastern Oklahoma State is leading that region, or that conference, excuse me, and they also have the highest Massey rating in the GAC at number 14. They're 16-4 overall with a 10-3 record in their conference. The number 2 team in the league right now is a team that we talked about the first time we discussed other teams in the region to keep an eye on in basketball, but I didn't really expect them to hang around based on their track record, but that's Henderson State. Right now they're sitting at 14-5 and 9-4 in the league, and they actually have a head-to-head tiebreaker over the number 3 team in the league, which is Southern Nazarene. Southern Nazarene was a team that coming into the year, I really thought that they might actually challenge Northwest and Missouri Southern as a team that could possibly host this region. They return possibly the best backcourt duo in the entire country in Division II, in Micah Spate and Jonathan Dunn. The two of those guys can score basically at will against almost any backcourt. They played against Northwest Missouri State earlier this year, and they lost that game, but as a team, they scored 88 points against a Northwest team that we know is renowned for playing just fantastic team defense. So the Crimson Storm sitting at 15-6 right now. They've lost some games that were a bit surprising and uncharacteristic, but they're sitting at 9-4 in their league, and they have a number 19 Massey rating. The next team out of the GAC, the next two teams, I'll pair them together, are East Central, which is another team that we discussed as getting off to a pretty good start in the 2019-20 season, but I didn't think they were a team that had a lot of staying power. They are 14-5 right now with an 8-5 mark in conference play, which means they were undefeated in non-conference play, and that included wins over Wayne State out of Nebraska, but also over that Nebraska Kearney team that I was pretty high on about a week ago. Sorry about that, Lopers. I seem to have a kiss of death. But they won. They beat the Lopers back in November by a final score of 86-78. They also have a win over Southern Nazarene, and they have a number 31 ranking in the Massey ratings. And then the final team out of the GAC is Oklahoma Baptist, who is currently sitting at 12-7 overall and 7-6. However, they also have a win over Nebraska Kearney in Shawnee, Oklahoma earlier this year. But they did have a loss to Rogers State, but they're past the toughest part of their schedule at 12-7, and the Massey ratings have them at number 48 overall. So, all of that being said, if you follow the Massey ratings, if the regional tournament started this coming weekend, the rankings would be as follows. The host would be Northwest Missouri State, so this would be the Maryville Regional. In the first round, Northwest Missouri State would take on East Central out of Oklahoma. East Central out of Oklahoma. The number two seed would be Missouri Southern taking on Henderson State out of Arkansas. The number three seed would be Southeast Oklahoma State, and they'd be playing Minnesota Duluth out of the NSIC. And the 4-5 game would be Southern Nazarene against Northern State. That is if you go strictly off of the Massey ratings. My rankings are a little bit different. I actually have three MIAA teams in the field in my bracket right now. I put Rogers State in over East Central because of the fact that Rogers State has actually beaten East Central head-to-head once this year. So my top three are the same as the Massey ratings. I have Northwest at 1, Southern at 2, Southeast Oklahoma State at 3. But then I have Minnesota Duluth as the 4 seed, Southern Nazarene at the 5 seed, Rogers State at 6, Northern State at 7, and the number 8 seed would be Henderson State out of the GAC. So the first round would go Northwest against Henderson State, Missouri Southern against Northern State, Southeast Oklahoma against Rogers State, which I think would be a really fun game to watch, and Minnesota Duluth against Southern Nazarene. So that's something to keep an eye on. If you love basketball in the MIAA, if you tune into the show around this time of year because you're hoping to hear basketball news, definitely keep an eye on some of those teams out of the NSIC and the GAC. I think that right now it looks like a pretty safe bet that, barring something unforeseen, Northwest is going to host this regional again. But I'll also say that if there's a team that has a chance to take that regional away from them this year, it might be Missouri Southern. So that'll be a really fun game to watch. Missouri Southern's got a huge game this weekend against Rogers State at home on Saturday afternoon. But if Southern gets past that game, then they should be favored in every game the rest of the way, except for potentially a couple of coin flip games against Northwest Missouri State in consecutive weeks, because that's the way the random draw went for the schedule this year. But once again, according to my algorithm, which is not super complex, just because I'm not good at math, but according to my rankings right now, if the regional started this week, the regional would be played in Maryville, Missouri. There would be three MIAA teams in the field, being obviously Northwest hosting, Missouri Southern, and Rogers State. And if you want me to go one step further, I would say that among the first four out in this region, that probably three of them would be out of the MIAA, being Nebraska Kearney, Washburn, and Northeastern State. But all three of those schools, all three of those teams, have a chance to make a move here moving forward. As a matter of fact, I think I alluded to it on the show last week. Nebraska Kearney should be favored in every game they play the rest of the year. So if they handle business the way that they should, then they, along with Northeastern State, should probably end up with 20 wins each. And in Division II at the regional level, if you get to 20 wins before your conference tournament, then you've got a really good chance to make that regional. But that is going to wrap it up for today's episode of the show. Again, I apologize to everybody for the episode being a little bit later than normal. We obviously had some breaking news that came out at the beginning of the week, and I wanted to give as much time as possible to give some people, some places, the chance to respond to the news that happened. I also was able to kind of use that time to reach out to some people that I know that maybe weren't willing to talk on the record. And again, I completely understand that. But to give me a little bit better insight as to what went on with that vote. The story is not over. I will say that to be sure. The story is going to continue to move on. I know that there are still a lot of people who want non-conference in football in the MIAA. And if it's to be believed what I was told, then a majority of the schools actually want it as well. It was just a technicality where two of the voting members were not present, and so they couldn't vote. But what I've been told, or what I've heard, is that both of the two that were not present wanted this. And so, again, if it weren't for some travel issues or some things that were out of some people's control, then we might be having a completely different discussion today. But I digress. We will definitely keep a tracking that story, as we have been for the better part of a year now. And you can be sure that as anything develops, we will report it here on the podcast and also on social media and on the message boards. But until next time, I am Jesse Cordova. Thank you for listening. Daps, high fives, and handshakes.